is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, welcome back to the program. And if you're just joining us, glad to have you along. The Donald Trump Thank You America Tour kicks off today in Indiana. They're going to go to that Carrier air conditioning plant. Carrier now announcing it is not moving to Mexico. Governor Mike Pence, now the president, vice president-elect, along with Donald Trump, the president-elect, will be at Carrier to announce a deal, a major announcement, they say, to save 1,200 jobs, give or take, there in Indiana, preventing that factory from going south of the border and shipping its product back north to us. Now, if I were going to guess about the Donald Trump Thank You America tour coming to Michigan, I'd say, absolutely, it's coming to Michigan. Now, where would you go? I'm guessing you'd probably go to Grand Rapids, where you wrapped up your campaign on the last night of campaigning on the 7th of November into the early morning hours of the 8th of November. I might go to Grand Rapids, you know, figuratively, you know, just guessing, I guess. And then I'm guessing I'd probably go to Metro Detroit as well. So, hypothetically speaking, that's what I meant to say. Hypothetically speaking, that's where I might look for the Thank You America tour to stop in Michigan. Grand Rapids and Metro Detroit. You heard it here first. All right, let's go to the hotline. Matt standing by in Okemos. Matt, welcome to it.
Yeah, I wanted to say that the Democratic Party needs to embrace JFK and not Fidel Castro, because JFK wouldn't approve of that.
Yeah, you know, that. I think you're onto something here, Matt. You see, the Democratic Party seems to have lost touch with the vast majority of America.
Right. And the other thing I wanted to, maybe you could get this to Donald Trump, stop and frisk should be voted on by the community that's at risk, not by the mayor saying we're going to have it or not have it. The community would vote it in if the high crime was there, because most people are good people, and they would vote for it if they wanted it in their community.
Yeah, again, good point you make there, Matt. And keep in mind, stop and frisk was not declared unconstitutional. The way it was being applied in New York City, focusing on strictly on certain communities and specific people, was declared unconstitutional. The practice in itself, not unconstitutional. Just keep that in mind. Matt, thank you for calling. The hotline number here is 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. In a few minutes here on the program, Stephen Nolan is going to join me. He is a host on the BBC. He does 5 Live on the BBC. And tomorrow here on the program, he'll be joining me to take your phone calls, because he needs it explained. He's going to be here for an hour or more, because he just doesn't understand why you would ever vote for Donald Trump. The guy's a misogynist. He's a bigot. You know, he's homophobic. He's Islamophobic. He's a demagogue. You know, he's arrogant. He's bombastic. He's petulant. He's a child. He's thin-skinned and all of these things, right? How could you possibly vote for Donald Trump? Well, that's why the BBC is going to be here, because they remain utterly and completely confused. We're here to set them straight. You and I, together, we can do this. I need your help tomorrow. I suppose if you want to call in today, we can see if we can get somebody through to explain to him, to give him a primer on how we're going to do this. Stephen Nolan, BBC 5 Live. And the broadcast tomorrow will be worldwide. So that's kind of fun, isn't it? We'll be worldwide on the BBC. And then later in the day, I'll be going live on his program for an extended conversation as well, as I take phone calls from the Brits, which sounds like great fun to me. I mean, that right there, taking cold calls from British people who don't understand Americans, that is my definition of entertainment. That is where I thrive. And so you can find that on satellite radio and such. I'm sure you can find it online as well. In fact, I'll find out about that. I'll have Alex look into it, figure out where we can find it so you could dial it in and listen to it streaming. Okay. Here in Michigan, the big story today is that Jill Stein has forced a recount, even though she got less than 1% of the vote here. It's going to cost Michigan millions of dollars. I told you 3 days ago that it would cost us about $5 million. Now, the Michigan Secretary of State says the same thing. She came up with the same number. $5 million. Jill Stein's required to pay $125 per precinct. Her total cost, less than $1 million. It will cost Michigan in excess of $5 million. You subtract her donation, her down payment, if you will, and you and I and the taxpayers get to pay the rest. And I find that absolutely infuriating. Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing... There's nothing left to, in doubt here. The election is not contested. And Hillary Clinton and her team, instead of being vindictive, instead of stirring dissent like this, in an election where you're not going to overturn three states, you're not going to overturn even one of those states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, or Michigan. So why create further division? What is your end game? Do you think you're going to run for president in 2020? Is that the plan? Going to run to, you know, come on, Hillary. It's not going to happen. Why can you not be a graceful loser? You see, in America, we have centuries, frankly, of gracious winners and people that bow out gracefully. Coming back 3.5 weeks after the election and asking for recounts that will cost taxpayers money out of their own pockets lacks class and grace. It has neither. And it has no point either, I might add, because there's nothing that can come from it. I would expect today that the Republicans may end up, you might see this, we'll have Ronna Romney McDaniel here in a few minutes as well. We'll ask her. But I would expect the Republicans just might end up in court today. And tomorrow, the State Board of Canvassers meets. There are four. Two Republicans, two Democrats, so they won't agree on anything. And I'm guessing they may end up going to the Court of Appeals, just a guess. But what I would suggest, why not have them consider this idea? Hillary Clinton did not ask for the recount. She did not legally join the recount here in Michigan. Jill Stein wants a recount. So let's count her votes. Less than 1%. You put all of the votes from, you know, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump over here. We don't care about that. And we'll recount Jill Stein's votes. We'll see if she actually had 51,000 or less or more. Okay? But that's what she's asked for. She paid us $1 million. Let's go find her votes. It'll save us a ton of money, a ton of time. And I don't know what the legal requirements are. Why not just do that? I think that's what the Republicans should ask for if they go to court today. Who's with me? All right, Alex found the direct line to BBC to listen live. We'll put that up on the Steve Gruber Show Facebook page. So you can find it, the Steve Gruber Show Facebook page. Click like, tell your friends, and gather around, because coming up in a few minutes, we're very close now, Stephen Nolan's going to join me here for his first taste of American radio. Let's show him what we got, kids. Back in a moment on the Steve Gruber Show.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show. Take it easy.
Soul ride. Take it easy. So, you know, I don't mean to make light of this, but methane is a problem. And I'm thinking, yeah, if you grew up in my house. But Jeff Steyer is a fellow, senior fellow at the National Center for Public Policy Research in D.C. and heads the risk analysis division there. And there are new EPA methane rules, which would spell disaster for the American economy if it carried out. Now, the good news is many of these regulations are going to get rolled right back out the door in January. But if they don't, there could be problems. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Good to be back with you, Steve.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. All right, so these methane rules, first of all, where did they originate? Why do we have rules about methane, which basically, if I'm not mistaken, another word would be flatulence from cows and pigs and, well, frankly, people, correct?
Yes, and energy producers. And that's where the EPA is coming in. They want to crack down on energy producers to reduce methane emissions. But the industry has been doing a pretty effective job on its own, spending lots of money and effectively reducing methane emissions over time from energy production. And that's a good thing, especially as we move closer towards energy independence. We're producing more energy at home. That's good for the economy. And it is good for the environment because we're producing natural gas that is lower in carbon emissions. But now the EPA, it's always in search of a problem.
Well, often is, right.
Yeah.
But I mentioned regulators do.
When you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Sure. But when I mentioned the cow flatulence, I say that somewhat in jest and it's humorous, but it's also one of the things that they have targeted in the green movement, which is, large farms, meat production, saying that that's creating global warming, so on and so forth, because the amount of methane produced by large herds of cows, which is absurd, unless you intend to eliminate vertebrates in this country and this planet. So I talk about that. But I also go back to the methane thing. When you look at fake documentaries about the energy industry and they say, oh, my God, look, the tap water is on fire. Well, that's true. You can light tap water on fire in some places like Wyoming and West Virginia because methane is naturally occurring in the groundwater, and you have, but it has nothing to do with fracking, nothing to do with the energy industry, but people that are uneducated and don't do their homework are easily misled, Jeff. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say, but beyond that, knowing that these people are easily misled and easily manipulated, the activists put out this junk science to advance their own narrow public policy agenda, which has very little to do with climate change. It's part of an anti-corporate agenda that doesn't want Americans producing things.
Well, exactly. So it really is, and it always has been, Jeff, my opinion, as I've looked at this, and I can go back to the 1970s and all the, inaccurate predictions about global cooling, mass famine and starvation and drought, and the whole world was going to come to an end by 1975, 1980 at the latest because people were destroying the world. It has always been putting a target on America. America consumes too much. America's too rich. America uses too many natural resources. America's too small to use all this stuff. It's always been the same argument, just packaged differently. And here it is again to me. I mean, that's the way I see it.
Absolutely. They're against wealth. They're against progress. There is this, and this is what I do for a living, Steve. I study this stuff. There is this concept that we are hurting Mother Earth by doing all that we do, and therefore Mother Earth would be better if we went back to the Stone Ages. Maybe we wouldn't live as long, but that's fine because when we live, we damage the Earth. It's really the bedrock of this approach.
Yeah, it is. It's to attack wealth. It's to attack success. It's an attack progress on capitalism and progress and America. America is always the criminal, and it doesn't matter if you go back, like I said, to 1970, the original Earth Day. It was always about America has too few people to use these many resources, and it's always America's fault. And then it became, we're going to do too much oil. Now it's fracking. Now it's whatever it is to advance their agenda.
And what most people don't get, most people here in the United States don't get, especially those promoting this approach, is that there is a strong correlation between wealth and a better environment. In fact, people in the poorest of places have the worst environment. And that's not because some corporations are coming in and making their lives worse and therefore we need environmental justice. It's because when you're poor, you can't also take care of your environment. Think of a wealthy person's backyard versus a poor person's backyard. The wealthy person's backyard is usually better taken care of. Steve, I just came back from New Delhi, India. I was there for a World Health Organization conference. And the air there was so bad. The pollution was terrible. The people there are living in terrible poverty.
Squalor.
Instead of doing proper techniques on their fields at the end of the season to pick up whatever wasn't harvested, they just burn the fields. And the pollution there is I can't tell you how bad it is. It's awful.
No, I've seen pictures.
I mean, it's
terrible. Well, that's the thing. You know, I've traveled to many countries, and I've not been to India. I've been all over this country. Let me tell you something. America is the cleanest, greenest, most wonderful, most taken care of, looked after nation on earth, period, paragraph. I mean, there's no comparison.
And that's not because of the environmental activists. It's despite them. The reason we do well is because of technology, because of our science, because of capitalism, which funds the innovation that makes our lives better. And that's really at the heart of these battles that we talk about all the time, Steve. They don't want innovation. They don't want progress. They don't want us living better. They want us going back to the old ways of doing things, where they have this kind of romantic view that things were better back then. You know what? They weren't better back then. They're better now. And if they get out of the way and allow us to have more innovation, more progress, we will live even better lives, and Earth will be better taken care of.
Well, right, and here's what they don't realize. We live longer, more prosperous, more productive, more healthy lives than at any time in human history, driven primarily by capitalism and led by America, Jeff. I appreciate you stopping in. I greatly appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
There you have it. Jeff Steyer, senior fellow at the National Center for Public Policy Research in D.C. When we come back, Stephen Nolan from the BBC on The Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
All right, welcome back to it. It's 33 after the hour. The Steve Gruber Show on a Thursday. And as I have been telling you here for the last few days, our good friends, our close friends on the other side of the water there, on the other side of the pond at the BBC, they're a bit confused, it seems, as to how we could possibly elect Donald Trump to be the 45th president of the United States. There seems to be some disconnect, some misunderstanding. So the BBC, who I've been, you know, contributing to for the last many months, reached out and said, you know, we'd like to have our host, Stephen Nolan, from 5 Live, come and join you on the air and, you know, take questions from your audience and kind of get a feel for why people voted for Donald Trump. And so today we thought we'd get Stephen on the air with us here and get to know each other a little bit and talk about, you know, what happened with Brexit, what happened with Donald Trump, the state of politics in the world today, which seems to be tilting to the right, and kind of sort it out. Stephen Nolan, welcome to the Steve Gruber Show.
Well, listen, before we talk about Donald Trump, let's talk about Steve Gruber. I've been doing a lot of reading about you. For goodness sake, have you got an empire? Are you up there at Trump level, Steve?
Well, not quite.
Have you got your own hotel yet and your own name on your building and all that kind of malarkey?
No, that's a good idea. I like where your head's at. I don't have the Gruber Tower yet, but I'm thinking about some real estate in Vegas. That'd be kind of fun, now, wouldn't it?
Well, listen, it's an honor to be on your show, sir, and thank you very much for the invite.
Well, I greatly appreciate it, and I know that at 5 Live, you have a program that's also 3 hours long. It's in the UK. What are the hours that you are on the air live every day?
Yeah, well, I do. I actually do 9 radio shows a week, so I do a big, big phone-in show in Northern Ireland in the morning from 9 to 10:30, get it easy. And then at night time on the network throughout the UK, we run from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. And we're looking at the result of the American election, and we're trying to understand why so many pollsters, not just in America, but all of the commentators here, got it wrong. They didn't think Trump had a chance.
Well, they didn't just get it wrong, as you point out. They got it wildly wrong, most of them, whether it was NBC, CNN, ABC. And you're exactly right about that. But what? So in Michigan today, a recount has started. We are the third state to have a recount. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, demanding a recount, even though there's no evidence of fraud or whatever. But she cited the polls being wrong as one of the reasons. And the polls simply were not wrong. You see, what happened is they just forgot about us here in the middle, be it Michigan or Indiana or Ohio. They were forgotten states. The Democrats have just lost track of the voters that used to support them, Stephen. I think that's what's happened.
But the experience that Hillary Clinton undoubtedly had in terms of political experience, why did that not hold more weight with the American electorate?
Well, you see, I think it's safe to say, that people are well acquainted with Hillary Clinton, well acquainted with Hillary Clinton. And the problem is that they just didn't like very much what they've seen. Now, here's something else to consider, though. Look at the last several elections, be it her husband, Bill Clinton, or John Kerry, Barack Obama being the only exception. the Democrats seem to have this ceiling at about, I don't know, 48%, 47%, and they can't seem to break that ceiling very well as to break through to get the 50% mark they need to win not only the Electoral College, which is confusing to people around the world, but also the popular vote. They can't get themselves elected very easily because they don't have that connection with middle America anymore.
Is there not a hint, though, of fear of the unknown? Because that's what Trump is. He's an unknown politician. Insofar as we don't know how he's going to behave as a politician yet, do we? You know, and a man that sits up in the middle of the night and sends out tweets as part of his political statements, that is not very presidential yet. But are we just all molded into the one boring way, and this is exciting, or is it crazy? Which is it?
Well, here's the thing that you point out. He sits there and he tweets at all hours of the day, but is that not the new normal? And for folks listening, we're going to be taking calls all day tomorrow. If you got a call right now, we can slide it in, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. It's a new way to communicate. Is it presidential? Well, you would think in the world of millennials and in all the devices we have out there, smartphones and laptops and tablets and so forth, Stephen, that, I mean, the world happens at a much faster pace than it did when you were born or when I was born. So if the president tweets out something, is that unpresidential? Well, some would say, and some would argue it's the new normal.
Yeah, but it's also, Steve, as you know, it can be dangerous if that tweet is written by the wrong person or he doesn't have his advisors saying, do you know what? Just hold back there or watch that particular word. It could be interpreted different ways. You know, those are the advisors who will be around any president with the type of power that Trump will have. Not him sitting in his bedroom at 3:30 at night, you know, munching a burger and sending out some tweet that could actually affect stock markets around the world.
Well, that could certainly happen. And we're going to have to see how that plays out. There's no question. But one of the reasons, without question, that Donald Trump was elected, people like the fact that he says it how he sees it. He's blunt. He's to the point. He is not, it's safe to say, he is not polished. Now, hold on, Stephen. We're going to take a quick comment from Jim. Jim is calling from Grand Ledge, Michigan. This will be how it's going to work tomorrow, folks, for about an hour. Jim, why did you support Donald Trump? Explain to Stephen, and you two can maybe figure this out a little bit. Go ahead, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Two reasons. One, promote capitalism again in this country and reintroduce it to a whole new generation that seems to have forgotten what that was all about and how this country got strong economically. And secondly, from a social standpoint, helping people to understand that they need to take personal responsibility for the decisions they make.
So accountability, there you have it, Stephen. Capitalism and accountability are two of the things that drove Jim to the polls. And let's take one more from Noah. Noah checking in from Ann Arbor. Noah on WAM 1600. Why did you support Donald Trump? Let's help Stephen here.
Yeah, so hey, I grew up in Ann Arbor, and I went to school at a small college in Jackson, South Jackson Hills College. And I think that Donald Trump is great to support because he supports a lot of deregulation. You know, that's been a huge problem with a lot of stuff going on. Sorry.
That's okay, Noah. I greatly appreciate it. Greatly appreciate it. Thanks for checking in. Again, the phone number is 888-900-9966. And, Stephen, here's what we're going to do tomorrow. We're going to have calls like that, and they're going to talk about capitalism, personal accountability, deregulation. You know, and because people, did Donald Trump behave boorishly? Yes, he did on occasion. Did he say things that would pretty much sink another political candidate? Clearly, he did. But people were looking beyond that, it seems to me, Stephen, and they were more interested in the economy, in their families, in having jobs again, which is, you know, I think the message we're seeing.
Well, look, I'm really excited about tomorrow. I travel to the States an awful lot. I admire the country. You know, I maybe travel to the United States 6 or 7 times a year for vacation. And it's where I would dream one day to have a radio show, by the way, Steve, if there are any going.
Well, by the way, we could trade, but let me ask you this before we run out of time. Does it affect your travel plans? If you come to America 6 times a year,
yeah.
Does Donald Trump being elected concern you for your safety, for your travel, for anything, or will you continue to come?
Of course I'll continue to come. I couldn't not come to the States. I genuinely think it's an incredible country. But if we even look at the prospect, the dollar against the pound now, you know, things are a lot dearer for us to come to the United States. Yeah. That's probably about Brexit more than it's about anything else, though.
Yeah, the price of admission just went up, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, big time. It's a wait-and-see game, isn't it? And we'll talk about it tomorrow. Looking forward to the show, sir, and we'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Stephen Nolan, everybody, from the BBC Five Live. We'll put that connection up for you on the Steve Greer Show Facebook page, so you can stream it live when I'm on his program. You can listen to it live tomorrow here or there. Worldwide broadcast. Stephen Nolan here to sort out how Trump got elected in the United States. Back in a moment.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
All right, 45 after the hour. 45 after the hour. All right, so Stephen Nolan will be here tomorrow from the BBC. He'll spend an hour with us, hour number two. And so I want you to think about how you would explain to him how we voted for Donald Trump. What were your, you know, what were your issues? What drove you to Trump? Or more importantly, what he brought up there. Why were you, you know, opposed to Hillary Clinton? All right, so the hotline number, we've got a little bit of time here as well, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. Sean is checking in from Bark River, Michigan, which is just north of the Escanaba State Forest. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Gruber?
Doing good. What's up?
I voted for Trump, but I do have a concern because to the victor belong the spoils, he said. That was a bad guy in Josie Wales, outlaw Josie Wales,
yeah.
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
I also know that if capitalism left completely unchecked to just run rampant, eventually nothing but corporations going to own every bit of soil on this whole earth because they never die.
Well, you know, now hold on, Sean. You make a good point there, which takes me back to the Teddy Roosevelt years as president. When you get the companies to get too big, they become monopolies. And, of course, he was the trust buster. They called him trusts back then. So if the companies get too big and overbearing, it's not good. If the government gets too big and overbearing, it's not good. Capitalism needs to be the leading machine or engine of the economy. But you're right. There do have to be some limitations. Otherwise, the corporations will take over. I don't disagree with you, Sean.
I'd also like him to explain who he was talking about, a story of the snake, the metaphor of the snake, the woman that got bit with the snake, bit by the snake. Was he talking about government, you know, the fearful masters, you know, like playing with fire? And I can't remember.
Well, that one I guess I missed. But at any rate, Sean, I greatly appreciate you checking in. The fact of the matter is I think the government was getting too big in one direction. Now we're correcting in the other, and hopefully we don't overcorrect and end up, frankly, in the ditch. All right? So there you go. The hotline number here, 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. Whatever's on your mind. But tomorrow, please mark it down. I want to hear from some of my favorites, like Jennifer, you know, who has become a crowd favorite, by the way. People mention her to me when I go out. So, Jennifer, here's a closed caption tip of the hat from me to you. All right, let's catch up on some other news now that's been going on that we haven't caught up on. We'll get back to the presidential recount here in Michigan that is completely absurd, but we'll get back to that after the top of the hour. Right now, the FBI says the Somali-born student who carried out a car and knife attack at Ohio State University might have been inspired by the Islamic State group, along with a former Al-Qaeda leader. FBI official Angela Byers and Columbus Police Department Deputy Chief Michael Woods spoke to the press yesterday about that attack. It's clip 10. Go.
At this time, we are not aware of anyone else being involved in the planning of this attack, but the investigation continues. It appears that Artan may have at least been inspired by Anwar al-Awlaki and the Islamic State in the Levant, and we will continue to pursue this as part of this investigation. That is one thing we really tried to work on, is the motive And when he came up with that plan, that's why we are asking anybody's assistance that may know any of his whereabouts that morning.
And there's really no determination as to why Ohio State, why that particular building, why that street. So that's all the information that we're trying to decipher from any electronic signatures that he's left behind. We do know that he purchased a knife that morning at a Walmart on the west side of Columbus, but what we don't know is if that purchase was the knife that was used in the attack. What I'd like to remind everyone is that this can happen in New York City, it can happen in Columbus, Ohio, or it could happen to any small town in the United States. So what we're asking again is if you see something that's unusual, let us know about it. Call the FBI, call the Columbus Police, and we can follow up on that. And that's one more step that we can use to maybe prevent one of these attacks in the future.
Yeah, but point of clarity here, because we've heard this for the last several years. Barack Obama calls it ISIL, always including the word Levant on the end. But the Levant would include Israel. Therefore, it does not exist anymore, and I find it to be inaccurate. And ISIS is far more accurate. So it's just one of those things that it catches my attention. It's not exactly right. In fact, it's quite exactly wrong. So we like to, I don't know, just want to make sure that you understand how these things all work. The Levant, when they refer to that, is a piece of real estate that includes Israel. And until ISIS controls Israel, well, that's not going to be accurate. I don't see that happening, for the record. Let's see here. The Donald Trump Thank You America Tour is getting rolling today. It's going to start at 2 o'clock this afternoon in Indiana, where Donald Trump and soon-to-be former governor of Indiana and new vice president Mike Pence will appear at the Carrier air conditioning plant. You remember during the campaign, of course, Carrier was one of those big symbols of factories closing and taking their jobs to Mexico. Well, now Carrier has struck a deal with the state of Indiana and worked with Donald Trump and Mike Pence to keep those 1,000 or 1,200 jobs from leaving the country, union workers, I might add. It might stand for a period of time. It's not certain what the future holds, but it's a good first step, I would say. So Donald Trump's going to go on this Thank You America tour. Now, if I were going to say, what states would you go to? I'd say he's probably going to go to, well, obviously he's going to go to Indiana, but I'd say he's probably going to go to Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, and Florida, and North Carolina. And, of course, he's going to come back to the place where he put a bow on his campaign on the last event of campaigning, Michigan. And I would expect, if I were a betting person, that Donald Trump just might end up back in Grand Rapids, and he just might end up somewhere around Detroit or in Detroit in southeast Michigan. Just a guess. I mean, if you had won the biggest election of your life and Michigan carried by 10,000 votes, that might be a couple of places I stopped on the Thank You America tour. You heard it here first. Back in a moment on the Steve Gruber Show.